So welcome to the Quality of Mind Transforming Business podcast. This is where we explore the new game-changing understanding that can unlock new levels of performance, resourcefulness, and well-being in the workplace. Join us if you want to be part of the new breed of leaders in business. Join us if you're fed up with the conventional echo chamber. And join us if you want to be part of the new revolution in understanding how the mind works and recognize that we are more than just our psychology and that that can lead to better results.
Welcome to the Quality of Mind Transforming Business podcast series. And in this episode, we're back in part two of our fly on the wall coaching observation sort of podcast series, where a client of mine, Helen, has very kindly agreed to share how she's seeing things, how things are progressing for her and her understanding during a coaching program with me. So if you haven't already listened to part one, then I'd really recommend you did that before we get into this episode, which is part two of this mini series, where we are about a month in and about four coaching sessions in with Helen. So if you haven't found out what we talked about in the part one, go and do that. But now we're going to talk about how it looks to her a month in and a few sessions in. So welcome back, Helen.
Hi, thank you.
So just a sort of basic question to start with, Helen, in a nutshell, and we're going to get into some more detail, of course, but in a nutshell, how's life looking now we're a month in?
It's good and it's different.
Great.
Yeah, definitely. Is that nutshelly enough?
Well, can you go just a little bit? So it's good and it's different. Just say a bit more about what's good and what's different.
So I think the word I keep using when we've been talking is buoyant. Mm-hmm. So it's not that everything is suddenly perfect and positive and happy all the time, but it's that when things are more tricky or more challenging, either I don't get drawn by them at all like I used to, or if I am and I'm back into that, I don't know, feeling rubbish or feeling frustrated or ego threats going on, I'm much more quickly come back up to what I'm keep talking about zero. So I feel like a bath toy or something that's been, if I've been put under the water for a bit, I'm bobbing right back up. Like it's not, it doesn't take a long time. It doesn't leave residual feelings of anything. It's just kind of I'm just buoyant. I'm bobbing back up much more easily, much more quickly. And on the whole, life's easier. Much easier.
So you're more buoyant. Life is much easier, I guess, probably because you don't spend so much time dwelling in the non-buoyant parts and you pop back up. And what are you sort of putting that down to? So if you were to just, you know, give us a touch on what's that about, do you think? How come?
So what you've always talked about is having realizations. And I guess it's that, as I sit here now, I kind of go, God, it's still like magic. It's still like some magic thing that's happened, and which is intangible and brilliant. So I've had some realizations through our time working together. One in particular that was very significant, and a few little drips and drops since then. And I guess the biggest thing that I see having shifted is my, again, what you'd refer to as your personal thinking. So it just feels like my personal thinking isn't present, or certainly isn't as present as it was. And I don't take it as seriously as I used to. I don't kind of, I don't hang on to it and make it mean something.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because often it's quite hard to express, you know, in a way that others would go, oh yes, I get that. Because it is quite, you mentioned the word intangible and magic, which sort of alludes to the fact, well, I can feel it, but I don't really know what it is, right? That's what kind of what magic is. It's like, well, it's kind of slightly invisible. But you know there's a benefit. And when someone asks you, you sort of express it and they're like, oh. So But this word realization, what do you see as the role of realization now? What do you see as a role? What is a realization? Not the content of one, which I realize you've been having, but what is a realization for you now?
So for me, it's seeing something differently and that leading to some shift in thinking, a shift in seeing the world in a different way.
Mm.
Yeah, just that really.
And you know, I guess in our work as a coach, whether we're a coach in this understanding or in any understanding, we're probably sitting with clients, helping them to hopefully have some of these realizations where you see something fresh. Do you have any sight yet of, you know, what is behind our capacity for realization? You know, what helps and what doesn't help them? What are they made of, sort of thing?
So I see them coming from mind. So the three principles, the mind, consciousness, and thought. Mind is the thing which comes through us, is our, it's our source of realization. It's our source of everything, our source of trajectory in the world, our source of motivation, our source of well-being. And that personal thinking is the bit that gets in the way, usually.
Okay, so I just want to ask you that question in a slightly different way, because just to keep a little bit of format to this, when we spoke the first time, there were a few subjects that we, or sort of topics that we spoke about. And I was thinking that we might try and look at those again and see what you see about them now, and then again at the end of our coaching program. So one thing we did talk about last time was... you talked about the rational mind and the chimp part of us, the chimp brain, and sort of the conceptual mind and the intuitive mind and the rational mind, which isn't miles away from what we're saying now. But I think actually there probably is, whether it can be expressed and heard or not, quite a difference in how you see it now. Is that right? So could you just talk a little bit about if you do see difference there and what it is? And then I'll try and explain it a little bit further as well for people if necessary.
Yeah, so I probably still see it closest to, and yet still different from, that rational intuitive piece. Mm-hmm. No, but it's not even that, actually, because the rational suggests, well, it kind of is that. It's the logic bit, it's the intellectual bit, the bit that we all are trained in school to believe is the important bit. But caught up in that is also the ego part, and the ego part is what normally leads to the threat response in normal life. I'll distinguish between normal and natural, because I've heard Michael Neal do that. I quite like that distinction. So I see those things now being, that's what we're trained, that's like our normal place to be, that's the place that people in the world think is normal, it's where we should be. The intuitive mind I now see as mind, and actually that's the important bit, that's the bit that really is the wind in our sails, it's the bit that really takes us on our journey of life and through our experiences. I think it's that.
Okay, and when we spoke before, you were talking about how we might have or need to develop sort of strategies to quieten the chimp or to manage it, or know where it came from, or that kind of thing. What do you see on that now?
I'm laughing because it just feels like such hard work. All of that, it's just feelings, it's just emotions. And whereas before I would be like, oh yes, that means something, we must explore and examine that and understand those thoughts that are leading to your chimp reacting, and you know, really get in a tangle of what's all that stuff that's going on. And it's just not that at all. It's just all thinking, which are stories that we create and have always created in ourselves about what we believe we're seeing in the world. And they do just get us in a tangle. And And actually, as soon as you realize that's all they are, they're just our own creation, then they just drop. They just don't matter anymore. Because, yeah, the feeling of that chimp response is only triggered by the thought, which is a made-up thought anyway. Yeah, made up. It's, yeah. And that phrase of it's real but not true. So it's our creation, it's our version of reality. And yeah, when you can look at it from a comedy perspective like that, it's, yeah, it just drops away and then you're left with mind.
And I wish people listening could see the glint in the eye and the smile on his face as I asked her that question, you know, because it's obviously something that looks very different for you now. And you're like, oh, it's so much easier now to see it like this. And I guess it's not easier because this is a something we're doing to make it easier. It's easier because this is how it is, right?
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, this is a better way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, when you see that all those stories, as real feeling as they might be, aren't actually true, they just dissolve. Mm. And you don't need to work them out. You don't need to decipher them. You don't need to analyze them. And they drop away. So it will sound like that's sort of taken a load off. You mentioned more earlier about being more buoyant, I guess, and you've got less thinking on your mind. Is that taken a load off just seeing that?
Yeah, completely. And it frees your whole self up. I think quite, I can't remember if it was our first or second conversation. I remember having a feeling of lightness at some realization in one of those of, God, that just takes the pressure off so much.
Mm.
Yeah, completely.
And if someone was thinking, well, okay, that sounds great. How do I do that? How do I see that these narratives and stories that I've made are actually made of thought and they can just dissolve? Because it sounds like, you know, Helen's just let them dissolve. That's great. If someone was to ask you how, what would you see in that right now?
I would say listen to this stuff and be curious. So, and I shared with you the other day, Piers, what I've noticed from our conversations together is that my habitual pattern, which has been my pattern through probably most of my life, is when I learn something and I hear from somebody like yourself, I'll then go away and I do lots of reflection and lots of thinking and make some notes, and it raises questions for me and I do lots of analysing. And normally that's where my life would stop. I would kind of get that far with any learning and apply stuff and, you know, intellectually go, all right, this is the answer now, let's do that. Whereas what I've noticed with our work is that I've been doing that, but then getting to a point of going, hang on, I'm completely intellectualizing this, I'm completely trying to analyze it, stop it, let it go, just leave it alone and stop trying to make it be something. Stop trying to get the right answer or be the best in class and just, yeah, let it go. And then that's when I've had shifts, that's when I've had realizations, that's when pennies have dropped. So it's not been actively doing anything.
It's interesting because that's a great example of the first thing we mentioned about the conceptual mind getting revved up. And that's, I think what I'm hearing you say, is that how you used to learn? You used to think, okay, well, I'll hear something, then I'll kind of apply my conceptual smarts to it, analyze it, and that will make it better.
Mm.
But it sounds like you're now spotting that's not the way to learn this kind of stuff. Because
completely.
Pre-conceptual mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another thing we talked about last time was, which is a common term in coaching world, limiting beliefs. It's, you know, and a lot of a coach's job in the conventional coaching world is to deal with limiting beliefs. And I think you said, you know, that that they get developed and at 18, they kind of get set and then we're still living as if they're there. And, you know, they kind of get stuck in our system. So what would you say about, what do you see now about limiting beliefs?
So it kind of comes back to what I said before of they're still just thoughts, they're still just stories that we've made up and that were created from our thoughts at whatever time they were created. And something I used to talk about was how, and I guess because I experienced it myself and saw it in others as well in normal world, I'd believe that some beliefs were much stronger. and harder to change. So those, I would talk about neural pathways and stronger neural pathways and how much harder you have to work to change those really strong beliefs that have been set there since you were 5 or 6 or whatever. And through this work, it's helped level all that and go, they're all just the same. Doesn't matter what the thought was, when it was created, how long ago it was, how significant the moment was that created it, because significance in itself is just a made up thing. It's still all just thought. It's all made of the same stuff.
Wow. And then that's not a common conventional view that, you know, all beliefs, all thought is the same in its essence, right? You know, some we give more meaning and feel like they're more deeply rooted, but they aren't, is what you're saying. And what you're seeing now is you recognize that actually, whether we think we've had it for 40 years or 40 minutes, actually doesn't make any difference because it's all made of the same stuff.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, in some of that, there's been things that I've heard others talking about, awful things, childhood trauma type things. And my initial response has been quite confronting of, oh my goodness, there's no way that could be the same as this. There's no way that can just be dropped and just a thought. But really, really, when I then let it sit with me and stay with me, it's like, God, but it really is. Like, no matter how dreadful we believe something to be in the normal world, really, really, it's still just all thought created.
Hmm. And it goes back to the statement that you mentioned earlier about, you know, our reality in any moment feels real for us, but it's not true.
Yeah.
So, you know, the realness makes it feel palpable and sentient and horrible. But it's not true. And as soon as the mind recognizes that, it kind of dissolves. Mm. So I guess that's quite a big thing for you to see. And I know we kind of joked about the name of your business, you know, about big trees having deep roots. And we're kind of saying now, well, there aren't really deep roots. There's just thought. So I'm not suggesting you have to change the name of your business, of course, but you know, it's just interesting how commonly held that is. You're seeing something different about that now, which is great. Another thing we talked about, and you have sort of touched on this already, but it was around the subject of well-being and what do we think well-being is made of, and you know, how and can we access it? So what do you see in the area of people's well-being now and mental health and things like that?
I'm kind of at fear of repeating myself. It all comes back to the same thing. We get in our own ways. We are our, by having and believing our personal thoughts, we create that for ourselves. We believe our thoughts, we make meaning from our thoughts, we turn them into, this is awful, that's been done to me, I'm a victim of. Yeah, the world outside me is being so horrible, I can't handle it. I'm not saying this to be dismissive. I know that people currently have terrible experiences of mental health conditions because we're all looking at it the wrong way. And yeah, again, if once you see that and see that it's all thought created, it's our natural place is actually that place of well-being. Our system naturally wants to be well and is well without us getting in the way of it. And it's about returning to that.
And just say a little bit more about that natural place. Is that, you know, almost like you're innately. Just say a bit more about what you see about that and the universalness of that.
So I see us as, there's the whole of human population is a system, all connected. We are all one, connected by big mind. I've gone way off here, but I'm going to talk this through anyway, and then I might come back. So I see there being this greater purpose, which big mind has, and we are all living in our individual purposes in pursuit of that kind of greater mind. As part of that system, it's set up to be well, it's set up for success, it's set up to write itself. And it's set up that not doesn't mean everything, as I said before, it's not that everything's happy and smiles and cheerleading along the way, but everything that happens is meant to happen. And whatever you're experiencing is just what you're experiencing, and that's all part of the journey. It's not about it being good or bad. It's an experience, and enjoy the ups, enjoy the downs, and it's just, yeah, go with it. And we all have that natural innate ability to be well, to be okay. That's actually the fundamental. We're all okay, and we've all forgotten it.
We're all okay, and we've all forgotten it. That's pretty profound. And also the thing you said before that is that, you know, it's not about only having the ups and not the downs. It's part of the journey, you know, to enjoy the ups and the downs and the ebb and the flow. And I think probably you tell me if I was wrong here, but it sounded like when we first met, you were a bit more thinking, well, actually ups are better than downs, and how can we stop some of the downs and have more of the ups?
Yeah, completely.
But it doesn't sound like you're saying that now.
No, and how much I've noticed it's everywhere. That we just... So an event I ran last week, and people were disappointed. They were noticing nasty stuff, what they classed as nasty stuff. So it was kind of an awareness activity. And they were disappointed that they were noticing negative information or yucky things. And therefore automatically, oh, that's bad, that's wrong, I shouldn't be doing that. We had the conversation today about how we say to people, have a good day, enjoy your weekend. Well, in fact, enjoy is okay, because then you enjoy whatever it is. But yeah, all our language is towards the positive and the good, and that's the only way we should be. And that's really unhelpful.
That's great. And then one of the sort of the last bits we talked about on the first conversation, and I know this was something that was important to you because you said it was quite fundamental to life in general, and that was relationships. And how you see, particularly in the workplace, a lot of a lack of a company or businesses or organization's success possibly coming by relationships that aren't working well, and you know, and that's probably true in all aspects of life. And you mentioned how, you know, getting trust in a relationship was important, and understanding each other's mental models was important. So I'm just wondering how you see, you're already smiling, but I'm wondering how you see relationships now.
Again, my God, we make it so hard. So what I've noticed about relationships is, I guess, different levels of it. So day to day, I'm noticing how I just have much easier, more natural conversations with people. So chit-chat in shops with like shopkeepers happens so much more. People seem to smile more. When I'm talking to people, like maybe just passing acquaintances on the path or something, that kind of conversation just feels easier. I'm not thinking about, oh, what should I be saying? Or is there anything I need to remember about them that I should bring up in conversation? It's just flowing. I'm noticing greater kindness towards others. At my previous place, although I'd come a long way from where I used to be many years ago, I still had a level of judgment about how others should be or what they should be doing or how they should behave, including my husband. And that's not there, which enables a greater sense of kindness and appreciation, because you're not scrutinizing and critiquing and analyzing. You're just accepting what is and seeing them for who they really are. And also finding that relationships where there might have been previously more challenge, where I, in old language, my chimp might have been triggered. I just observe what's going on now. I'm trying to think if the right word is detached or non-attached. Perhaps non-attached, because it's not that I don't care. I want the work, I want that conversation to succeed. I want that relationship to succeed. But I don't get caught by it. I don't get triggered by it. I know I'm repeating myself, but it comes back to when you've dropped all those thoughts, you're not trying to figure out what am I meant to be doing? What are they doing? What are they thinking? What am I thinking? It just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And that tangle, you know, I talked about the tangle earlier in terms of if you're working with just one person on what's going on from a thinking perspective and trying to unravel all that spaghetti. And then imagine that multiplied in a team of 5, 8, 10. And if you're trying to untangle all that spaghetti, oh my God, that's just huge. And I remember thinking that when I first did my team coaching training and said to one of the tutors, this is massive. This is so complex because of all the stuff that will be going on for people in this room that we are trying to notice and observe and help them change. And I remember thinking, God, this is a massive task, and was quite like overwhelmed by it. And now I'm in the complete opposite and going, it's really not that hard. Because if you had a team full of people with this awareness of this realization, this way of seeing the world, oh my God, it would be amazing. And the potential that could be unleashed there would be incredible.
So you're talking about if you had a team or a group of people in an organization that all saw these principles, it would demystify and untangle all those personal thinking webs and assumptions and separate realities that happen.
Yeah.
And just say a little bit more, because you sort of started talking about it and then it dropped off a little bit, because you mentioned something a bit earlier about big mind or us all being part of the same thing. And how do you see that helping untangle the spaghetti, if you see what I mean by that?
So because we, in normal world, like categories and concepts and boxes.
Mm.
And so we'll say, well, you're like this because you're Myers-Briggs I, and you're like this because you're in finance, and you're like this because you're, I don't know, white male, and you're like this because. And we create all these segments and distinctions and separateness. We create disconnection between us and layers of the stuff because of all the differences we can spot about each other. And again, what is natural, what's our innate place, is actually that we're all connected. And again, we've forgotten, we've lost it behind all these layers and behind all these boxes. We are actually, and already we are all connected, and we just can't see it for all our thinking.
Hmm. Yeah, which changes the emphasis, doesn't it? Because if, as you said earlier, you know, when you first started hearing about team dynamics, that it was our psychological job to work out how to untangle the spaghetti and work out what person A, B, C, D, E thinks given their own worlds, and you had to psychologically untangle that.
Mm.
That's so much harder than recognizing actually underneath all the personal thinking, we're already aligned in our connection. And I don't mean aligned and we're going to agree with, we both think strategy A is right, but our ability to connect, understand each other and even to disagree is going to be so much simpler because you realize that's already there. That's innate. And we just cover it up basically.
Mm.
So as you said, it takes a weight off, doesn't it? And it allows you to just see a team for what it is and understand the power that could be sitting there. But we don't realize.
And people might have seen that. I know I've had moments, either myself in work or with working with others in my business, where I might have put people in a situation of going for a walk together or sitting quietly together somewhere in a nature-filled environment where people are more able to drop their thinking and they do get that level of connection and they're connected, and they may well be disagreeing about the thing they're talking about, but they're connected in it. So people might have seen snippets of that, and that's this that you can have all the time, or almost.
And I think that's exactly right, because, you know, as we said before, that this understanding is explaining how the system's already working.
Mm.
So you will have experienced buoyancy before. For you will have experienced, you know, teams working in a superly, you know, like almost magical way, and this is demystifying that and therefore increasing the likelihood of it happening, because you're working in alignment with system rather than doing what we normally do, which is get in the way of it. That's why people will have can join the dots with this. So is there anything else generally that, you know, you would say to someone who's listening in wanting to know what it's like to, you know, be in his understanding? Is there anything else you would want to add that we haven't covered?
I guess the other thing that fits with the flowing nature of it, so the fact that relationships are easier, conversations are easier. The other thing that I've noticed being easier, and I did feel like I'd already made shifts with this through my meditation, and there's been like a layer on top, and that's around productivity and getting stuff done. And it doesn't necessarily mean, in fact, it doesn't mean I'm working harder and on it more. It means that I'm trusting actually that it's all going to be okay and stuff will get done. I still plan stuff, but I plan less, and I find that things just happen and fall into place. And what I might have previously called serendipity means that, oh, look, I have actually got time to do that, run that errand, or do that piece of work now. I'm kind of, yeah, that just all feels much more flowful. And when I do sit down to do perhaps a bunch of work at the desk, I get through it so much faster. And if, again, it feels easier, feels way easier, because I'm not overthinking, I'm not over processing stuff. I just get on and do.
Well, that's great to hear, because, you know, what you're sort of saying there is you're getting more done in the same amount of time, and you're getting it done with more ease. And you also mentioned earlier, you're more buoyant doing it. And you're smiling at more people and finding it easier to connect. So, and relationships are less complicated. So that's quite a broad sweep. that's good. And I guess people might be going, oh, I wonder what's going to happen in part three. You know, what else is there to come? And that's what I love about this understanding, actually, is, and this sounds a bit trite, but it is totally infinite. So, I've got one or two ideas about what might emerge for you in the next few months, but who knows where it will go. But I think you've really nicely articulated it as well, which isn't always easy, because sometimes people can feel the benefit but not articulate it. But I think you've managed to do both of those. So that's great. And I think hopefully people are getting, maybe you can say something about this, getting a feel for, we haven't really touched on each of those areas in turn in our coaching. We've only had four sessions, you know, and gone through each of those areas and said, well, here's how it turns in productivity. Here's how, you know, well, we haven't really addressed those issues at a conceptual conversational level, yet you're still seeing things change and improve in those areas, even though we haven't really talked about them particularly. A few we have. So what would you put that down to? Because that's a different kind of change to conventional change, you know, in how I would see it. But what would you say about that?
I would kind of say, so we have and we haven't. So, there's been conversation around the principles in general. We have had conversations about relationships. And that, I would see that as that's been helpful, because the things that you've said, and I can't think for the life of me what you said at the time, but the things you've said have then done something in terms of planting seeds that's led to different realizations and different awareness. But there's almost like a multiplier effect. Or perhaps, no, do you know what? Actually, it's probably the opposite. Because I guess, notice the common theme of it all comes back to personal thought being in the way. Actually, it's the fact that these are principles. It's the fact that everything we've talked about points back to it's all thought. So that no matter what we've talked about, because we have talked about normal world concepts and stuff, some of those things that I've been wanting to change, but it's everything comes back to the same. It's there's those fundamental underlying principles which are non-divisible and which are just the the basis of everything.
Great. Yeah. And I keep harking on about principles and how important they are. And I don't know whether people always hear it, because why would they? Because it makes sense to me. But I think that's a lovely way of putting it, that it all comes back to that. And everything we talk about, what we would say downstream, what you're working out for yourself, and I've nudged you a little bit, but not really, right? you're working out for yourself, come back up to this. And you're joining your own dots. I'm just guiding you, but not really. It's not really me. And you're starting to see that, and then you're joining your own dots and go, there we go, back up to the same thing. And that's why working at what might to start with look like a very foundational, slightly abstract level starts to pay dividends downstream later. So that's great. So just as we sort of bring this part two of this little mini series to an end, please feel free to say anything else. And even if I put you on the spot, if someone's to say, well, so far, is it worth it? Is it what you thought? You know, and I realize you don't have to answer that, especially when I'm sitting opposite here. But
yes, it is.
Okay, there we go. Well, thank you.
Well, you know, like I was massively, well, I said it on the first one, I think, didn't I? I was really worried about, is this just all made up? And I've still had those thoughts through this last month. Am I spending money on something? Am I spending time on something which is just a load of nonsense? And yeah, absolutely not. It's I keep saying to Gary Turner, who first I heard of you on his podcast, I keep saying, thank you, Gary, thank you, thank you, thank you, because without him I wouldn't have come across you, and then we wouldn't have been doing this work together. So definitely worth it. Definitely.
Well, that's great to hear. And I hope that this podcast can do the same for other people that it did for you. So maybe someone goes, oh, I heard Piers talking to Helen on that. So thank you so much again for doing this, because it really is a privilege to get this sort of behind the scenes, fly on the wall insight a little bit. And I really look forward to obviously Karen coaching with and also doing our part three, which will be a few months down the road, and seeing what else we get. But thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's been great. Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please reach out and leave us a review and a comment. If you want more info, check out makingchangework.co.uk or Piers Thurston on LinkedIn.